And we'll continue with the chapter. We've given you enough time, I think, for looking at chapter 3. And you've heard the first two sections discussed in the classes. So can some of you volunteer to offer your section titles for the rest of the group? One of you? You have titles? Question about what?
Questions of Arjuna.
Questions of Arjuna, okay.
And 3 to 9 is duty.
Duty, okay.
Then
what kind of duty?
Duty means nishkam karma.
Yeah, okay.
And 10 to 16 is yajna or karma kandis.
Mm-hmm.
And nadi.
Mm-hmm.
And what I could see is 17 to 35 again is speaking of duty or nishkam karma.
Mm-hmm.
36 is when he starts inquiring about lust, from
36
to
43. Right. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Chaitanya Charan, come on.
17 to 35. Even self-realized.
17 to 35.
Even self-realized. Perform duty. Set an example.
Okay. What about the from verse 1? As who? As him. Exactly the same, yeah? Okay.
Verse 3 to 9 is karma is better than jnana.
3 to 9.
Karma is better than jnana.
Okay. Well, that's different from his.
10 to 16 is Yajna purifies the heart and provides for necessities. Yajna purifies the heart, mm-hmm. provides for necessities.
Okay.
And 17:35 is.
Mm-hmm.
36:43 is identifying and overcoming the enemy of lust.
Okay, good. You have that written down somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. Someone else? In the VTE workbook, they have just 4 sections, and they didn't make the first 2 verses a separate section. So, and since there's not much there, it's just a question. And, right? Then it seems that we could put it all in one section. Arjuna is asking, you know, what should he do, renounce or should he work? So we could call this section renunciation of work or work in devotion. Or you can just call it renunciation or work, question mark. And 10 to 16 is called from karma kanda to karma yoga. Because in that section Krishna is like encouraging the yogic, the selfish yogic persons, although the religious, to focus their mind on the supreme absolute truth, akshara, instead of just meditating on the demigods and what they're going to get from the demigods. So that section is kind of bottom part and going up higher. Then the third section is let's see, there's 2 different names here. let's call it nishkam karma, to set the correct example. And the last section from 36 onwards is called beware of lust and anger. So your sections were very similar to these names, your titles. That's good. So when you read something, you should be able to do this. Actually, if you just practice doing this with me for this Bhagavad Gita, then by the end of it, when you read something, you'll always be thinking, oh, what is this? And what is it saying? And, you know, and what is the next part saying? When you read some shastra, your mind will think like this. Okay, so we're starting from text 17, the second section, or what is it? Yeah, the third section. So from 17 to 21, Krishna describes the position of the self-realized person in relation to work. Although he doesn't have to perform his duties, he does so anyway to set an example for others, for the common men. And Krishna uses two examples, one King Janak Maharaj and one of himself, to show that although King Janak was self-realized, he didn't have to perform his karma yoga, but he did so anyway. He performed his prescribed duties to set an example for the rest of the citizens in the kingdom. And Krishna also doesn't have to perform his prescribed duties, but he does so. And Krishna concludes this section by warning Arjuna not to give up his prescribed duties, because just because there may be some faults in those duties, but rather he should continue to perform them instead of performing someone else's duties, even though he may desire that or he may think that's better. Okay, so let us begin. Yastvatma ratir eva syad atma triptas ca manavah atmanyeva ca santushtas tasya karyam na vinyate. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. So compared to the previous section, we see that there was great stress on performing all of these yajnas and various duties and sacrifices. But here, now Krishna says, yes to, right? Which means but, however, anyone who is atmarati, that means he's satisfied or getting pleasure from the soul. He's not looking for the sense, he's not looking for his pleasure from the sense objects. Atma tripta, he's self-satisfied. So people who are like that, tasya karyam na vidyate, for him, there's no need for any duty. Prabhupada comments, a person who is fully Krishna conscious and is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. So the purpose of all of these yajnas and duties is that the person becomes purified, his heart becomes purified. And the purpose of the karma yoga duties, the varnashram duties, are similar. So if someone is already pure, then he doesn't actually have to perform these. As given previously, the example of Madhavendra Puri. Right? He was able to give up his sandhya vadana and his tarpana to the devas and pitris and so many different things. Because he was meditating smaram smaram adam harami. Right? He's destroying sins by remembering yadu kulottamasya. Right? The best of the Yadu clan, Lord Krishna, who is Kamsa Dvishaha, the enemy of Kamsa. So if one can just think of Krishna always, then he doesn't have to do anything, really. He doesn't perform any religious duties. Text 18. Naiva tasya krite narto na krite neha kashtana tasya sarva bhuteshu kashtit artha vipashaya. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So you have the words krita and akrita, or kritena and akritena. Yeah. So krita or kritena means that there's no interest in performing actions and no desires to fulfill by such actions. Because he's saying na, right? Na kritena. Naiva tasya kritena arto. There's no purpose in him performing any duties. And akritena indicates that this person is not implicated in sin by not performing his duty, his action. And he doesn't have to take shelter of any other living beings. He doesn't have to worship any big men in this world or any demigods. He just is connected with the Supreme. Okay, text 19. Tasmara sakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakta yacharam karma param apnoti purusha. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme. So again, Krishna is recommending nishkam karma, working without attachment. Asakto yacharam karma. One should do that.
It is sannyas duties. It comes under which category?
Sannyas duties.
The duties that a sannyasi performs, in which category does that come? Prescribed duties or it is nishkam karma yoga? Because my question is, if Krishna is here telling him that don't give up your duties, do your duties, they are detached to it, so that you can set an example for others. So if that is the instruction, then why have the sannyas category
in varnashram dharma?
No, in sannyas order. Yeah, in the varnashram system.
Well, as we mentioned, that there's four kinds of sannyasis also. But the Paramahamsa, he doesn't have any duties. Yeah. Although he's mentioned as, you know, he's mentioned, it's just for categorization. But the Paramahamsa is completely free from varnashram duties. But the other sannyasis, they have to perform duties. You know, depending on what kind of sannyasi they are. If they're karma sannyasis, then may still do some particular types of meditations or something. And jnana sannyasis, just like Shankar, or is it the sannyasi that Lord Chaitanya preached to? Prakashananda Saraswati. So he said that, why are you just dancing and chanting like a madman, like a bhavuka? And you should study Vedanta. That is the duty of the sannyasi. So the sannyasis have to, but if someone's a paramahansa, then he doesn't even have to beg, because he doesn't even think about maintaining his body. He doesn't think that he's his body. He's not even aware of his body. Paramahamsa doesn't set an example. But Krishna's playing the role in different ways, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Acharya. And as Krishna, then he's God himself. But the Paramahamsa is not coming to teach anyone. Okay. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that, my dear friend, you're not qualified to act like a jnani and just renounce your duties. But also, you're not so attached like kamya karma person. So therefore, you should do nishkam karma. You're not so attached as like a sakam karma person. Therefore, you should do nishkam karma and gradually be liberated. So Arjuna asks, are there any examples? So now Krishna gives an example. Karmana eva hisam siddhim astita janakadayaha loka sangraham evapi sampasyan partam arhasi. Kings such as Janak attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. So, karmana eva ki samsidin. So, perfection has been attained simply by performing prescribed duties. And Janakadaya, Janaka and others, other kings. Prithu Maharaj also performed Karma Yoga, even though he was a Shaktivesh avatar. So he was also a self-realized king. So why do they do this? Loka Sangraham, right? For the common people. So, Arjuna, Sampashyan, you should consider these things. And Kartamarasi, and then you should act like them. Follow their example.
So, text number 18 is for Paramahansa.
Huh?
Text number 18. Does it correspond to your Paramahansa?
Yes. Well, I didn't read in particular, but I would say Atmarati and Atmatripta is like
why I ask it to because in Surrender Unto Me, Buddhism says that text number 19 is Krishna explains whether or not an Atmarati should work. Whether Atmarati should work or not. That is said in text number 19. So which would mean that even a Paramahansa or Atmarati will have to work for the sake of setting
example. Yeah, they should, but not Paramahamsa. Not Paramahamsa.
If text number 18 is Atmarati.
Yeah. Well, Paramahamsa is also Atmarati, and so is Prithu and Janaka. So But they're acting, you know, as a king. So if someone is in just, you know, in Babaji Vesh, then he doesn't have that responsibility. But if somebody is acting as a king, as a Kshatriya, then he must release. So Prabhupada comments, kings like Janak were all self-realized souls. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform the prescribed duties in the Vedas. Nonetheless, they performed all prescribed duties, activities, just to set examples for the people in general. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that even if you consider yourself to have the adhikar, to follow Gyanamarg, still, you should perform your nishkam karma in order to set an example for loka sangraha, for the people in general. Because Arjuna was not only a kshatriya, but he was in a royal family, in the family of the Kurus. So the Kurus, they could, and they were expected to actually take the role of emperors of the earth, like Bharat and Kuru himself. So, and not only that, but Arjuna was already famous, even before he won the battle of Kurukshetra. People were very much aware. Actually, his name was a household word. Like, people would use him as an example for a great fighter. Or when children were playing, say, for example, they would, you know, one of them would say, I'll be Arjuna. And another would say, yes, okay, I'll be Rama, or I'll be someone else. And then they would fight, or play. Play fight. Or, you know, amongst the men, they might say that, our friend, he's as courageous as Arjun. Or, he's as brave as Arjun. So, Arjuna's name was a household word. People would use his name very often. So, it was very important what he was going to do. The whole world is watching, really, to see what he will do. And then people will naturally follow him. Because he is the leader. So the leader has that great responsibility. Although Paramahamsa, people generally think he's just a madman. Right? He's not in any responsible post within the government, or within in the educational circles, or in any circles. People just think, oh, this person is crazy. He's like Judd Barrett, or the Python Man, or, you know. There are examples in the Bhagavatam. Just a person lying on the side of the road, and Prahlad Maharaj is the only one who can notice that, you know, he's actually an elevated soul. He's just laying there, you know, and the only thing he eats is the fruit that falls from the tree. And if it doesn't fall, then he's not concerned. Yeah. So Janak Maharaj was like that too, but he was in the post of a responsible king. And he was very much attached to hearing Ram Leela, Krishna Leela. And so daily, royal associates, they would come together with the brahmanas, and they would hear some harikatha. And sometimes brahmins from other locations would come to visit. One time there was a famous katakar that came, and he was famous all around the land. So Janak Maharaj would come himself, especially to hear him. And so every day they would assemble, and that Katakarwala, he would sit and he would wait until the king came, even though all the Brahmins were there. So this was going on day after day. And some of the Brahmins, they were wondering, you know, he's always waiting. He won't start the recitation unless the king comes, even though the king comes very late sometimes. But, and they thought that, oh, he must be attached to just the remunerations that the king's offering to him, something like this. But after some days, there was a fire in the kingdom, and therefore some messengers came running into the assembly while they were hearing Harikatha, and those messengers came up to the king's area and they told him that there's a fire right near the royal treasury building. What should we do? And he said, just tell the minister of finance, he'll take care of it. He was unconcerned. And then those messengers ran to the Brahmins and they said, there's a fire and it's coming close to your residence. So, and then immediately all the Brahmins just jumped up and ran out from the assembly. Yeah. So it showed that actually the king was more detached than the Brahmins. He was focused on Harikatha. But the Brahmins, although they were finding fault in the king, and in that Brahmin, they thought that the king, they thought that the Brahmin was just attached to the remunerations. But actually, the reason why he was waiting is because he realized that the king was the most advanced bhakta in the assembly, and then the Brahmins were not on the same level. So he wanted to please the king because he wanted not just the remunerations and the donations from the king, but he realized that the king was appreciating the katha more than the other people and that he was the real devotee there. And the next verse. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tat tad eva charo janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokastaranu vartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So Prabhupada says, people in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. And the last sentence says, all such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with the standard books of moral and spiritual codes. So now, in the next three verses, Krishna presents himself as an example for common people. Nami parthasta kartavyam strishu lokeshu kinchana nana vaptam avaptavyam varta eva cha karmani. O Sanapritam, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three worlds, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. So Prabhupada quotes the famous verse, Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. The Supreme Lord has no duties to perform. Right? So if the Lord doesn't need to do anything, and yet he's acting according to Shastric regulation, one might ask, why does he do this? So the next verse describes, yadi yaham nakvarteyam jatu karman yatanvitaha mama vartmanu vartante manushya parta sarvasham. For if I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. And this is the reason. Mama vart manu vartante manusha partha sarvasha. All men would follow the Lord's example. They would imitate. The word anuvartante means they will follow, means they will imitate him. Even though they're not God. And that is the general principle. People in general, they never think that, oh, I'm not qualified like Arjuna, therefore I can't follow his example. They always think that, yes, I'm just as qualified as the next person. And just see, Arjuna did like this. That looks like fun. I think I'll also do that. Yeah, by giving up his duties. Like Arjuna, he gave up his prescribed duties and just went to the forest. Yeah, I'll do the same thing. They never think, no one ever thinks himself, you know, of a lower adhikar than anyone else. Everyone thinks, I'm just as good as the next person, so I can do that. Why not? That's the general tendency of the conditioned soul, that he always thinks himself more qualified than he actually is. Prabhupada comments, although such rules and regulations are for the conditioned souls and not Lord Krishna, because he descended to establish the principles of religion, he followed the prescribed rules. Otherwise, common men would follow in his footsteps because he is the greatest authority. So generally, Krishna followed all of the Shastric rules and regulations to set examples for our common men. Like as a grihastha, he would also rise early in the morning and perform meditation on himself. You know. And he took care of his queens and his children, and he went to the assembly house daily as a good king should, and he fought and protected Dwarka from various demons. And he performed ritualistic sacrifices given in the Vedas. So he set an example. Generally, Krishna sets an example for others. Of course, when he was a boy in Braj, okay, he stole some butter and some... But children, they can do anything. People are not going to take that as a very serious example, right? Because he left Vrindavan, he was still 10 years old and a few months. You know, he wasn't even 11 years old. So we can't use that as an example. Oh, he was dancing in the forest with other men's wives, with the gopis. Of course, Krishna sometimes kind of shows that he's beyond the regulations of the Shastra. And he exhibits magnificent pastimes like Rasa Lila to attract his devotees. But other than that, he generally would follow, especially when he took the role as a king. Then he didn't start dancing with the gopis. So he performed those things before he took his, you know, public position as an authority. So you can tell your fellow, your fellow men of the Indian nation if they sometimes, you know, criticize Lord Krishna, which they sometimes do, and say, "Well, he was just a bacha. Come on, he was 7 years old." So now, if common men follow, an example of giving up one's prescribed duties, then what would happen to them? What would happen if the Lord failed to perform his prescribed duties and everyone followed him? They'll become degraded. So the word Utsideyo means they'll become degraded. Utsideyo rime loka nakuryam karma chedaham sankarasa chakartasyam upahanyam ima prajaha. So this verse also answers or refutes Arjuna's fifth objection. Oh, is it fifth? Oh, no, the fourth objection was about the destruction of dynasty Kulakshaya. Because when the Kula is destroyed, the family traditions are destroyed, then the members of the dynasty begin to act irreligiously, and then the women become polluted, and then the result is Varna Sankara. So here the word Sankarasya is there. So that was part of the ramifications of destruction of the dynasty. So here Krishna is describing that if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would therefore destroy the peace of all living beings. So in other words, he's referring or hinting that to Arjuna that, so if you do the same thing, if you give up your prescribed duties and go to the forest, then everyone else may do that also. They'll follow you, anuvartante. They'll imitate you, even though they're not qualified. And if they give up their prescribed duties, then the idle mind is the devil's workshop. They'll be in the forest trying to meditate, and they'll think of women and money and sex. So then they'll become degraded. They'll create Varna Sankara. So the same thing will happen. If people give up their prescribed duties because Arjuna does that, then Varna Sankara will be the result. So, in other words, Arjuna thought that if I fight, then pollution will come and then Varna Sankara will come. But Krishna is saying, no, if you don't fight, then pollution will come and Varna Sankara will come. Okay? Is it clear? So, Prabhupada uses the word imitate 6 times in the commentary. And then it's the word anuvartante, which was from the previous verse, now being echoed in this commentary. And he says that we cannot imitate the Lord's lifting Govardhan Hill. We may not imitate Him at any time. We cannot imitate Lord Shiva and drink the ocean of poison. One cannot imitate the Ishwaras who are super powerful, like Mahadev. There are many pseudo-devotees of Shiva who want to smoke ganja. That's imitating him. And he says there are pseudo-devotees of Krishna who imitate the Lord's Rasa Lila, forgetting the fact that they're not able to lift Govardhan Hill, which was Prabhupada's famous retort, right, to this. If you want to dance Rasa Lila, then first lift Govardhan Hill. Right? So one should not try to imitate the powerful. Again, so 6 times in the commentary it mentions. Interesting. So there's a definite tendency in conditioned souls to want to imitate, isn't it? That's called anukar. But instead of being anukaris, we should be anusaris. Right? We should follow the essence of the great personalities. Alright, text 25. So now Krishna gives a comparison of 2 kinds of people, the attached workers and the detached workers. In the next In five verses, from 25 to 29. Okay, so you see the first attached person. Sakta karmanya vidvangshu yata kurvanti bharata kurya vidvangstata saktash chikirshu lokasangraham. Again, the word lokasangraham. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. So, sakta and asakta. Those who are attached and those who are unattached. Those who are unattached are called vidvans. They're intelligent. So, Prabhupada comments that a person in Krishna consciousness and a person not in Krishna consciousness are differentiated by different desires. A Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not conducive to development of Krishna consciousness. He may even act exactly like the ignorant person who is too much attached to material activities. But one is engaged in such activities for the satisfaction of his sense gratification, whereas the other is engaged for the satisfaction of Krishna. Therefore, the Krishna conscious person is required to show the people how to act and how to engage the results of action for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. So, Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur has commented on this verse that even someone who's firmly situated on the platform of jnana must do karma. Krishna concludes this topic with this verse. 26. Na buddhi bhedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam jashayat sarva karmani vidvan yukta samacharam. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. So, please note the word karma sangina, those who are attached to fruitive work. And the other is vidvan. So, you'll always see that the ajnanam karma sangina. As in the last verse, it was mentioned also, the sakta or avidvangso. Those people who are attached are considered not intelligent. But those who are vidvan, they may also work, but joshayat sarva karmani. They dovetail their work. So it indicates that if we're going to instruct people about performing nishkam karma, detached work or sacrificial work or devotional work, then we ourselves have to be doing that first. Joshayat sarva karmani. Because we can't tell people, we can't preach to people to perform devotional service unless we're performing it ourselves. And similarly, someone can't preach to someone to do nishkam karma unless he's doing something himself. If he's just sitting in the forest, then it's not going to have much effect. Right? So, in commentaries by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that Krishna is speaking with Arjuna, and he says, "O Arjuna, a man of knowledge should not bewilder the ignorant karma sanghis by telling them, there's no purpose in mundane acts, so become perfect like me, by renouncing karma and cultivating jnana. Although you may be perfect by performing nishkam karma, you can encourage people to perform their duties. You become an ideal example by doing your duties, your karma. Now, Arjuna, if you say to me that previously I told the devas in the sixth canto, chapter 9, text 50. Because you told the demigods to do their karma. I'm sorry. You told the demigods not to instruct someone to perform karma. And now you're telling me to perform my karma. So this is a contradiction. So then Krishna says, my response is yes, but I was speaking about bhakti. Now I'm speaking about jnana. So there's no contradiction. Jnana depends on purity of the heart, but bhakti is independently powerful. She doesn't depend on purity of the heart. Because anybody can start performing bhakti yoga, actually. Even a very sinful person. If one is able to arouse shraddha in bhakti, then it is considerate to disturb the intelligence of the karma sanghi. Because Krishna is saying, don't disturb the mind of the karma sanghi. But that's because he's talking about the traditional field of jnana. But so it's a different topic. But in bhakti, it's considered considerate or kind if you can actually instill shraddha in bhakti in the person. Then you are able to actually disturb him, you know, by distributing books and going on Harinam. And so the people say, hey, you know, come on, go away. And they say, no, come here, take this book. So you see, Krishna's talking about jnana here. So, but when you're talking about bhakti, then you have a different set of rules. Ah. Right? So then he continues, he says, those who have developed shraddha and bhakti have surpassed the necessity to perform karma. And this example is given, or the statement in the 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita, chapter 20, text 9 is there. That is the reference for that statement. People who have shraddha in bhakti, they don't have to perform karma. When one becomes attached to hearing Krishna's pastimes, he has no need to perform the regulations or prescribed duties given in the field of karma or varnashram dharma. Therefore, it is mentioned, Devarshi Bhutapti Nilam Pitranam Narayana Rini Charajan. Right? Nakinkaro nayamuni charajan. The one is not a servant or indebted to the devas, the rishis, the living entities, the wife or the family, any relatives. If he's actually taking shelter of Mukunda. Okay, so that's an important point. So, now Arjuna asks, if people in knowledge and people in ignorance both work, then what is the difference? So texts 27 and 28 answer this question. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahamkara vimudhatma. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. This is the main difference in their mentality, in their worldview. Right? The ignorant, they think themselves to be the doers. But the intelligent, the vidvangso, they know that actually it's the modes of nature which are forcing people to act. And then ultimately, Krishna is controlling those modes of nature. But he is the supreme controller. And he is the supreme doer. Prabhupada comments, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform. But there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. Then the last sentence. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body, for due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Right? Why? Because of his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification. Therefore, his false ego becomes very strong. Because when you perform acts of sense gratification, it just strengthens your misconception that you're this body. And the more you control the senses, then the more the false ego gradually dissipates and the intelligence begins to become stronger. Okay, another part of the answer, the next verse. Tatvavittu mahabaho gurna karma vibhagayo guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajjate. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty Arjuna, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work in devotion and work for fruitive results. Purport. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses. He knows that his material condition of life under the supreme control of the Lord is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reaction, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. So his view is much different from the Karma Sanghi. The Karma Sanghi doesn't see the Supreme Lord. He doesn't feel that he's in an awkward situation. He doesn't think that, you know, what happens to him is the mercy of the Supreme. And he doesn't see any need to dovetail his activities with the Supremes, with the Supreme Will. Because he thinks that I'm the doer. He doesn't think he needs anything. He feels himself to be completely independent. I remember when I was a child, I met one friend of my father's, or a friend of my family, and he used to come to our house, and he was very convinced. He said, "I have faith in only one thing, myself." And what I can do with the sweat of my brow, with the work of my hands. I don't believe in anybody, just myself and what I can do. That was his conviction. So he's this Karma Sanghi who is bewildered. There's a lot of people like that who actually think like that, especially in the Western countries. So, there is some extra commentary here. This is by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe. He says that those who know the distinctive characteristics of guna and karma are called tattvavit. That's his definition, tattva-bhidha. They know the distinctive characteristics. Vishesha-lakshana. They know that the gunas are of three kinds, sattva, rajas, and tamas. That's clear. And that the karmas are influenced by those gunas, and plus the karmas are influenced by the devas, and the karmas are influenced by the senses and the sense objects. So the karmas are influenced by four things, right? The devas, the gunas, the senses, and the sense objects. The devas and the gunas, they preside over the senses. Like the sense of sight, for example. You have Agnidev is the presiding deity of your ability to see. And they also preside, the devas and gunas also preside over the sense objects too. Like the sense object of the eyes is form. So that's why certain forms attract your eyes. Because the gunas are connected with your eye. Not your eyeball, but the sense, there's a subtle sense of seeing which you take from one body to another. You don't take your eyeball from one body to another, but you have a kind of software, let us say, that you carry from one body to another, and it clicks into your new computer or your new body, and then you see with that software. It's a subtle energy. We'll get to that later. I think it's in the 15th chapter. It describes this. Yeah, that's right. So that sense of the eye is under a certain guna, either sattva, rajas, or tamas, and therefore it's attracted to sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic sense objects. Right? Like when the pig sees stool, he starts drooling. Mmm, that looks delicious. Right? Because his eye is in the mode of ignorance. And his whole consciousness. And when the very lusty man sees a young girl, he thinks, ah, a beautiful young girl for me to enjoy. Because his eye is controlled by the devas, right? And by the gunas and the sense object. That young lady is also in rajas, and his eye is in rajas, so boing, there's this, you know, connection, which people call love. But it's just the modes of nature connecting together. There's a kind of energy connection there. So the tattva-vidh knows that, hey, I'm aloof from all of this stuff. I'm aloof from the gunas. I'm separate from that. He's tattva-vidh. So he knows the vishesh-lakshana of the gunas and the karmas. That was our original statement. Our original definition. Right? So then when you feel that energy, right? When you feel that attraction of the senses to the sense objects, then you should know, at least theoretically, and then later maybe some deeper realizations will come, that it's just this, that my sense of sight is being attracted to a corresponding sense object, which has the same modes of nature. That's why there seems to be some connection. So the gunas are forcing that feeling of connection or attraction. And that's also being enforced by the demigods. That's why it's so strong. It's the demigods. They're created the body in such a way. It's interesting, huh? Okay, so we should all try to become tattvavit. Text 29. Prakriti guna sammudha sajjante kurna karmasu tana krishna vidamandan krishna vinna vichaliyat. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. The wise should not disturb them, right? Vichalayat. Na vichalayat means don't agitate them, don't disturb them. Because they're mandan, they're lazy. They're manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya ubadruta. Right? They're kind of slow and foolish. So we have some commentary here. So there's a question. If the jivas are distinct from the gunas, then why are they attached to the sense objects? Did you write it? Did you catch it? If the jivas are aloof from the body, they're not the body. If they're distinct from the gunas of the senses, right, then why are they attached to the sense objects? The answer is, they become bewildered by the gunas. They become so bewildered due to absorption in the gunas. Just like a man haunted by a ghost thinks himself to be a ghost. So the jivas absorbed in the gunas identify themselves as the gunas. Did you ever see some guy maybe hanging around the train station, you know, walking around talking to himself? And shouting, I don't want to talk to you. Like this. Have you ever seen people like that? That means they have ghosts, right? They're everywhere in all the countries. Any train station, you'll see people like that. Especially if they drink alcohol. You think, what's wrong with him? He's talking to somebody. You know, like a young boy might say to his, look, Daddy, that man's talking to somebody, but nobody's there. Right? He's like ghostly haunted. So it's like he thinks himself to be that ghost. And he's acting, you know, as that person did in his previous life, talking to somebody that he was angry with. And now that human being has taken on that role. It's like playing a drama, like a crazy. That means the person's crazy. So he thinks he's that ghost. Thus influenced, they become attached to the sense objects. So similarly, the jivas absorbed in the gunas, they identify themselves as the gunas. Thus influenced, they become attached to the sense objects. Therefore, kritsnavit, or tattvavit. In this verse, kritsnavit, that means they know everything. They shouldn't unsettle the akritsnavit, saying that you're a jiva, not the gunas. Right? Someone may try to preach to that crazy man, right? Hey, what are you doing, sir? You're talking to nobody. You're wasting your time. You should come to the temple and chant Hare Krishna. The guy will say, "Ah!" He'll start, you know. Right? It won't help you, right? You preach to the guy. He's a madman. A haunted man will never understand that he's actually not a ghost, but a human, even if he's told hundreds of times. You go to the guy 100 times, you tell him, give up this life and chant Hare Krishna. Madman. His bewilderment can only be removed by the medicine of mantras. Ah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. No amount of verbal instruction will help. He should simply be engaged in nishkam karma, which automatically frees one from absorption in the gunas. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's statements. Now. So often, it doesn't help to spend a lot of time preaching to somebody. Better you give them prasadam and get them to chant. That's the mantra, that's the medicine. And the, you know, the diet is the prasadam. Like in Bombay, also in Juhu, they have in the front, someone says, come sit down, here's this mala, just chant. You know, a lot of people there chanting japa in the front. Have you seen?
Yes.
Yeah, they engage in even before they walk in the door. Here, take this mantra, sit down, chant Hare Krishna. Right? Because they may not chant when they go into the temple, they may just... Of course, if they see the deity, that's also helpful, but it's very good if you get them to chant right away. Because then when they see the deity, then something more will come, because they're already started to chant. And then they give them some prasadam, and that's it. You got the medicine and the diet and some darshan. Then the darshan has a lot more effect. You might consider this in your temple. Prabhupada writes, the last paragraph, men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. Because the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord, because they understand the purpose of the Lord. But the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try to engage them in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So not only are they more kind than the Lord because they know what the Lord wants, but they also realize that if I can give this person shraddha in bhakti, then I have a right to disturb this person a little bit, because I don't want to disturb him too much, because then if he goes away, then I won't be able to, you know, engage him in bhakti. So both of these reasons are there. The devotee is more kind than the Lord in some, if a person's advanced, the devotee is advanced. And also he knows that the path of bhakti has different rules than the path of jnana. So you see, generally, although Krishna's dropping a little bit of bhakti, and his ultimate goal is to bring the person to bhakti, but in this first 6 chapters, mainly we're talking about jnana. This is the traditional school of jnana that we're analyzing. But as we said, karma and jnana are the same. Karma leads to jnana. Right? The purpose of doing nishkam karma is jnana. So we're talking about jnana. How to get jnana. How to get realization we're not the body. We perform nishkam karma. That's the only reason why nishkam karma is valuable, because it gradually brings you to jnana. And that was Krishna said. I'm not telling you different paths. I'm telling you two different levels of the same path. He said already. In this world, there are two kinds of nishtha. Right? Dvivida nishtha. What is the verse? Lokeshu? Lokesmin? Dvivida nishtha. In this world, there's two kinds of nishtha. Right? Then he said, Sankhya. Karma yoginam Jnana yoginam sankhyanam karma yogi
yoginam.
These are two levels on the same path. They're not two different paths. Because Krishna, he said that Arjuna is saying, which of these things do you want me to do? You're telling me to do all these different things. And Krishna says, your question doesn't make sense, Arjuna. Had I told you two different things, then your question would make sense. But actually, I didn't tell you two different things. I told you two levels in the same thing. Karma and jnana are not two separate paths, but they are two levels on the same path.
Yeah, two different levels in the same path, then how karma or nishkama karma is very closer to bhakti.
We'll get to that. Because we're talking about jnana.
There are three levels. The one is the jnana platform. Another one, the atma is a self-realized person doing karma. And then below that, we have somebody doing karma who is not yet purified. So Arjuna's confusion appears valid. Because those who are doing karma are not purified. They are suffering due to three modes very much.
Yeah.
On the other hand, one who is in jnana platform and not doing any work is completely altogether different type of lifestyle, you know. So these two appear quite distinct. Without introducing nishkama karma, we cannot call them the same.
Without introducing nishkama karma, we cannot call them the same. Well, that's why it's introducing nishkama karma. That's where all of these statements are emphasizing nishkama karma.
What jnana he gets by nishkama karma?
What jnana does he get? He realizes that I'm not this body, aham brahmasmi. And it depends how? By performing nishkama karma. How does it work? In the prescribed duties, there are fibers of knowledge. The knowledge is hidden inside of the duties. Just like fire is inside of a piece of wood. Right? How does fire come out of wood? Because it's inside there. Because the wood is the tree was sitting in the sun for 50 years. And it soaked up that energy from the sun. And then when you just touch a little bit of fire to it, the whole thing explodes in fire. So similarly, the karma, the prescribed duties are created by God. And He has knowledge. So the knowledge is put inside of those activities. And when you do them, then the knowledge comes out. And the acharyas give the examples of the stem of the lotus. Inside of that stem, coming out from the water, if you cut it, you'll see all these fibers, capillaries, canals, right? Tubes, which suck the water up. But you cannot see it from the outside. So similarly, the prescribed duties, the karmas, they have knowledge inside of them, and you cannot see them. By performing those duties, the person, like the water, rises up from the lake to the lotus flower without your seeing it, just by being inside of the lake. So similarly, by being inside of the pool of karma and performing the prescribed duties, the knowledge rises up to your brain. This is the way it works. I don't know if we want to continue with more questions right now. Somebody already asked a question but about nishkam karma being closer to bhakti than jnana. But see, we're going to have to, I guess, discuss some of these things a little bit. Where's our eraser and marker? Red and black. Okay. Okay, there's the animal level. And then karmakanda. Then karma yoga. Sakam and nishkam. Jnana yoga. Ashtanga yoga and bhakti yoga. Should I use this? Hare Krishna. It's not on. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram.
This is a traditional kind of graphic, linear presentation of how everything works. Because as we said, there are in karma yoga there's work and knowledge. In jnana yoga there's knowledge and detachment. In Ashtanga yoga there's detachment, knowledge and meditation. And in bhakti yoga there's all of those. With, right, so devotion, meditation and devotion. Like five components. So in Sakam Karma, the person is attached to the work and to the fruits. But in Nishkam Karma Yoga, he's only attached to the work. This person gives some small percentage of his, you know, work to some higher cause. He's still attached. But this person is developing detachment, and he's giving all of the, whatever he can give, he's giving. And that's what brings him to the jnana level. This person develops jnana, he goes through the jnana stage. He doesn't have to perform jnana yoga. Okay? But he goes through a stage. Just like we also go through these stages. We're performing bhakti, but we go through karmakanda stage, we go through karma yoga, we go through jnana stage and ashtanga. And finally we come to bhava bhakti. That's like real bhakti. Nirgun bhakti. No modes. Okay? And bhava. So jnana, nishta. This happens in chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, which we haven't gotten to yet. But because all of you are so inquisitive, we are now describing some of these future lessons. And it's kind of easier to do once we get to the topic, but just to satisfy your inquisitive nature, we're saying a little bit of what we're talking about here. So, why is karma yoga closer to bhakti? Yeah, these are two very good friends, karma yoga and bhakti. As I said, Prabhupada has recommended in the renunciation or wisdom.
Huh?
Sword of Knowledge. Right? The book Sword of Knowledge recommends karma yoga. It doesn't recommend jnana yoga at all. Never. Why? Because when someone does his nishkam karma, it's always beneficial, even for a person's self-realized. He's just going to become more self-realized. Right? If someone performs jnana and is not actually have the adhikar, then he can very easily fall down. It's dangerous. And plus, in Jnana Yoga, you have generally an impersonal conception of the Absolute due to the Upanishadic presentation. Doesn't present Krishna, the personality of Godhead. And that is the Gyan Khanda. Generally, people aren't really prepared for that until they have the Adhikar for Bhakti. But that's a separate thing. Getting the Adhikar for Bhakti is a separate thing from its whole thing. See, this is the traditional scenario. You know, but if you can meet a sadhu who is a Vaishnava, you don't need to do any of this stuff. But if you're performing bhakti, you have the components of all of these in bhakti. You have work, you have detachment, you have knowledge, you have meditation, you're meditating every morning, right? All of those things are in bhakti yoga. So to really understand bhakti yoga minutely, then you have to understand all of these other yogas, because all of the components are there in bhakti. So ordinary people should just continue doing their karma. They don't have to change their, you know, what they're doing. And they just add hearing and chanting. What's that verse? No, in Bhagavatam. Stane stita shudikatam anuman anogir. So, you stay in your place and just hear and chant about Krishna. So you, karma yoga has, nishkam karma yoga has work and knowledge. Right? So the person's an act, so in bhakti yoga there's also work and knowledge. And when he comes up through the jnana stage, then detachment will also be there waiting. Inside of the activities of bhakti is also knowledge. Not only in the karmas, in sadharma. The activities of bhakti are more powerful, more knowledge. And then you have meditation, and of course you have devotion. So there's no need to switch and start doing this and this. You can just add them. You already have work and knowledge. And as you go up through the stages, I don't know what you call this, but just call it meditation. Maybe dhyan nishta, I guess you can. Right? You get dhyan nishta. And you carry them into the field of bhakti. Because bhakti, you're active. But here, there's no work. You have meditation, detachment, and knowledge, but there's no work in Ashtanga or in Jnana. Right? You have knowledge, detachment. Yeah, that's it. And Jnana, you have knowledge. And so these are two, both of these are inactive yoga systems. Right? But to perform inactive yoga, you have to have the adhikar, jnana nishta. You have to be totally detached from sense gratification, completely. And the mind has to be controlled, and the senses have to be controlled. Otherwise you'll fall down. But bhakti, there's work there. This one and this one both have work. That's why they're very similar. And that's why Someone can begin sakam karma. He doesn't have to have any adhikar practically, except for some desire to be purified. And the same with bhakti. These require very high adhikar. But bhakti begins right from the base. A person can come from karmakanda and start doing bhakti right down here. And he takes the elevator right up to the top. He doesn't have to walk step by step by step by step. You've heard that example hundreds of times, I'm sure, right? This is, we're here, we're taking the elevator, Prabhus, right? This, the traditional system is you step by step by step and many lifetimes. Mahonam janmanam ante. In the field of jnana. But in bhakti, you can go in one lifetime. Jnana yoga, their people are
inactive, you are saying.
Connected?
Inactive.
Inactive.
In what sense they're inactive?
They're not working.
But what they do?
What do they do? That's a good question. No, they study the Upanishads and they speculate. And they talk about, they study philosophy. That's all they do. Can you imagine that you came to join the Hare Krishna movement, right? No chanting, no dancing, no deity worship, right? No preaching, just studying. And not even studying Bhagavad Gita, studying Upanishads. No Krishna Leela, no Gaura Leela, right? Then you lock you in one of these rooms, right? And you just, we'll give you the Kena Upanishad, Katya Upanishad, and you can just study them. And that is your Jnana Yoga. Right? In 3 days, you'll probably jump out of the window. Or even by the end of 1 day, you'll be hearing the kirtans. Yeah! What's that? What's some prasadam? And we'll just bring you some old rice or something to eat, you know. No feast, no, you know. Because Jnanis, they don't have prasadam, right? But their food is very dry and simple. Just some old rotis or whatever. So that's why these two are very similar, because they're active yoga systems. And by doing nishkam karma, you develop knowledge, and you can come through these stages in bhakti. You can come to bhakti. Krishna's stressing, okay, you want to be traditional? Alright, do nishkam karma. And by the way, of all the yogis, the one who thinks of me with love, he's the best. And like this. So the philosophy and the practice are very similar. Because you know, also people in who do karma yoga, generally they do Bhagavad Arpit karma yoga. That means they accept, you know, they offering to Ram, to Krishna, to Narayan, or maybe Surya or Vishnu, whatever. Mahadev. But at least they have a personal conception, you know. It's very close to bhakti. So you see that Krishna doesn't really spend much time with jnana. Because there, you know, in chapter 12 we'll discuss all these things, but we should wait. Otherwise we have nothing that's to talk about when we get to chapter 12. Okay.
If someone purifies themselves through this conditional way, after achieving bhakti stage, what he does, whether he becomes active or not? Because in between he's inactive. So that again he becomes
active. Well, we'll see that generally, yeah, they can begin the inactive yoga system. When they come to realize they're not the body, and they realize that they're not the senses or the gunas, they're aloof, then they can control the senses. So So then they can begin again to understand what is Akshara, what is Brahman, what is the Supreme, what is Parabrahman, what is Parameshwara. That's Jnanakanda. So they can do that. Then they can just sit and just in a room all day and study and speculate and talk about Supreme in a very limited way, you know. And when the senses become more controlled, when the mind becomes more controlled, then a person can just go off into the forest all alone. He's not afraid. And he can just start meditating on that Akshara. Not just think about it and speculate about it and study about it, but now he can actually try to connect in that way through Ashtanga Yoga. Because the person has to be fearless, his mind has to be completely controlled. More than the Jnana Yogi. Ashtanga Yogi's mind is fixed. So then he can go. He'll begin in the village first, and then later he'll go out to the forest.
What is Bhakti Yoga for Ashtanga
Yogi? Paramatma. And he thinks, ooh, how beautiful. That's the Supreme. It's not just an energy, it's person. And he thinks, how beautiful is that Supreme Person? And he likes to meditate on the Supreme Person. And he feels some affection. Because the Paramatma is also very beautiful. He, you know, looks like Krishna. His beautiful lotus eyes, sham complexion, right? Beautiful dark curly hair with a beautiful smile. He thinks, I'd like to serve him. So then when that desire comes, then he can enter into bhakti. So if that happens, then immediately the person will be sitting there, and then some Mahabhagavad Vaishnava like Narada Muni will show up, and then he'll look up from his meditation and then bow down, and Narada will instruct him. As soon as there's some appreciation for the beauty, for the personal characteristics, and some desire to serve the Supreme, even if it's in Shanta. In Shanta, see, yogi is similar to the Shanta Bhaktas, because they really don't do much seva, only in dasa. In Shanta, they just appreciate Bhagavan. But they're appreciating Bhagavan, and they have prema. So then it's a kind of a jump, you know, from the yogi who's in Paramatma Nishta to the Bhagavan Shanta Nishta person. It's very close. You can easily go to Bhagavan, and then the Lord will present himself as the, you know, personality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who loves his devotees. Not just some object that just... I'll think about it. Yeah, it's possible.